Welcome to Retro Nick Radio.
You're now Commander Shepard after that.
It's all good.
The best dancer on the Citadel. Good evening, Retro Nick Radio listeners, and a very special evening it is. Spring is in the air, it's warm. And we have with us a very special guest who's going to be talking about an exciting new project, something that hasn't really been thought of since the old 32-bit / 64-bit eras. And that, my friends, I'm talking about, is a cartridge-based console, a new cartridge-based console in the 21st century that is going to be wearing the clothes of a dead man. It's going to be in the shell of the Atari Jaguar. And with us to talk about it is the founder of the project, Mike Kennedy, who is also the founder of GameGabble.com and a co-founder of Retro Video Game Magazine. So, Mike, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Retro Nick Radio.
Hey, guys. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. So, I guess the first most obvious question that I have about this project is, what was the inspiration for this project? Like, where did this idea stem from?
Yeah, sure. Well, actually, this idea has been floating around in my head and also Steve Wade's head, my partner, for probably close to 2 years. This whole idea of creating a brand new cartridge-based console to play new games on cartridges. Obviously, there's been other cartridge-based consoles, the Retron 5, and, you know, NX has got some, the Retro Trio, all brought about to play original game cartridges. And so this whole idea, again, to bring back cartridges for new games was again, something we've been thinking about for a couple of years. And it wasn't until it was at E3 last year, 2014, where I was walking around the floor and in Sony's booth and in Microsoft's booth, there was just like half of their booths were dedicated to bringing in indie gamers to show off their games. And most of these games were all sprite-based retro games. And I thought, the time is now. If Microsoft is taking this seriously, and if Sony's taking this seriously, and actually Nintendo is one of the sponsors of Indiecade, where there's just almost nothing but retro games there. It's like, wait a second. These, you know, the big guys are now seeing that this is a genre. And I really believe, you know, the other part of this equation is it's an art form now. I think retro gaming and those that look and that style of the 8-bit and that 16-bit, even 32-bit stuff, it's an art form. And that's why you see people making sprite art and painting it. And all these developers that grew up on these games are now making these games that are paying homage to these games that they grew up with. Because the play mechanics and the gameplay of all of these games is timeless. Even with, you know, when compared to the AAA titles of today, they're really timeless. And I think because, again, it's an art form, that's why it's becoming this genre. And I think it's going to be here for a long time. And so I've started thinking now's the time to bring out a cartridge-based system to play these games on cartridges again, because a lot of these games are great and they need to be preserved. There's a lot of great mobile games that are retro-inspired that just play like crap on a touchscreen. Mm-hmm. How cool would it be to bring some of these games back, like Retro City Rampage or something, on a cartridge with a nice controller on the big screen, but preserved on cartridge again? So 5 years from now, 10 years from now, people that want to play that game on original hardware, like we all have the luxury of doing that kids these days. I mean, frankly, if you're growing up, you know, and you're 15, 18 years old, 16, 12, whatever, and you're playing all of these games 10 years from now, you get out of school and you become nerds like us and you want to start buying all of these games that you used to play back in the day. And they're not even thinking about this yet, but they're not going to be able to do it. You know, they might be able to emulate them somehow, but it's just not the same thing as having this wall of games that people are so proud of and then they show off and they collect. All that culture is disappearing. And so we really want to bring that back. And that's part of the reason we're doing this is just to keep that culture that we all grew up with and a lot of us started with in the 70s and the 80s and keep that culture around where you can bring a cartridge to school and trade it with your friends or trade it with your buddies or take your cartridge over to their house and bring the saved game with you and play it on their console at their place. all of that kind of, you know, all of those types of things that, that I think people just sort of took for granted back then. You just can't really do it that way these days. And so that's part of the reason that we want to bring back a cartridge-based console is just for that culture and to maintain and continue that, that culture.
Okay. No, I can definitely see that, because the major thing that I've noticed with the current generation of games is that it seems like we are moving into a disposable era where we have all games that are dependent on servers. And once these servers are taken down, the game is taken down. Like, I believe Titanfall, correct me if I'm wrong, Titanfall doesn't have an offline mode, does it?
No.
No.
So
even though there's a playthrough on your own, you have to be able to connect to their servers in order to play that.
And you have to play multi.
Right. So, I mean,
you don't have to, but you can.
I mean, even if you didn't have to,
yeah,
like,
there is
the original
a solo campaign takes all of about a half hour to run through, but it's meant to teach you the game.
Regardless, the original Phantasy Star Online even lets you play solo, like, offline. But the idea being that, hey, you can come back and you can play this game later if you want. You can play through old quests again. And if Phantasy Star Online version 2 said you couldn't, and once SegaNet went away, that game became bricked.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah, I mean, how
terrible been a problem
is that?
For a while.
I mean, especially if you love that game. I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah.
And it, you're right. It's all disposable right now. And it's going to just get worse, you know, as time goes by. But at least for retro gamers, we have a chance if people get behind this console, like I think people will ultimately, to start preserving at least these types. It's great that they can be preserved because they're freaking timeless. Even if they're new today, 10, 15 years from now, if you can still find a cartridge on eBay or GameGabble or wherever, at a swap meet, or, you know, you could get it, find the system. There's just something about that, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's, I mean, you can look around here. I don't know how well you can see it through the tiny low-resolution background. But, yeah, no, there's just heaps of consoles, carts, and discs just lining the walls. And it's because...
It's all a blue screen, Nick.
Yeah.
Nick is very, very good at manipulating images, but he does not own a single retro game.
We're actually at Troublemaker Studios. Like, Robert Rodriguez is doing this all Sin City style.
Uh-huh.
God, I wish.
Just a big wallpaper back there. It looks flat, now that you mention it. I see no depth.
James.
If I actually reach behind me and tap, you can see the whole thing wave.
It'll just tip over.
it just waves.
Thank God none of us wore a blue shirt.
I don't know, a disembodied head might bring more viewership. Okay, so I guess I need to God,
where did you leave that machete?
I used to have an old Civil War era bayonet. Anyway, I don't want to rattle off track. Does anyone else have a question for Mike? I've got a
Absolutely.
Ton and I don't want to monopolize
Absolutely.
This. Please.
And, okay.
Have at it.
I want to know about hardware specs. I mean, I'm a hardware guy. I want to know, are we 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit? Where are we on this thing? How much room is a developer going to have?
Great question. Now, I'm not a hardware guy. I'm not a software guy. I'm sort of the crazy guy that's bringing this team together. And I've got two hardware guys. Steve Wade is one of them, ex-Atari Sega guy. Yeah, he also is hardware. He did a lot of stuff on the original Apple IIe. I'm talking way back.
Wow.
And a gentleman by the name of John Carlson, who relatively recently was working on a system for Sony. They were working on a localized plug-and-play for, like, Argentina or some smaller country where it would have a bunch of plug-and-play Sony PS1 games in it. Mm-hmm. And it ended up getting tabled because they thought that it was going to confuse the marketplace. They were done with it, and then it just never happened, as, you know, lots of gaming items over the course of time. But I guess, you know, I'm going to answer your question in a roundabout way. First of all, we're probably 2 to 3 weeks away from really announcing what is going to be inside this thing. But what I can say is that we're going down a path right now that there's never been something like this put inside a console shell. It's not going to be an Android-based system. It will certainly play nice with the low-level languages, potentially up through Unity. But we're not sure on the Unity aspect yet. We've been going back and forth on Unity for a year. Well, 6 months, 6 to 8 months. Now, Unity 5 just came out, and it's not as resource intensive as Unity 3D. They're really trying to kind of promote it to 2D developers again. And we may be talking with Unity directly here shortly. But it's really important for us that developers of any size, whether they're assembly guys, C guys, you know, right up through like a Unity type, where they can bring games onto this thing. So we're talking about creating a system that can replicate through hardware emulation. We don't want to really want to call this an emulation machine, all right? Because we will have our own core that people can develop for exclusively for this console. But if people are used to making games for the Genesis on the homebrew side, or the SNES or the NES or even the Atari, we don't want them to have to change and learn a whole new tool chain or whatever. So if they make a game for the Genesis, we're going to have brains that will mate up with their game in the cartridge that will tell our system, hey, this is, you need to be a Genesis right now. And we're not doing this for emulation of old games. I mean, that's really, there's so many ways you can emulate old games right now. We're doing it for the ease of developers. And that's about all I could say. I mean, it's going to be, I think it's going to be pretty revolutionary what's underneath this thing. I think gamers that understand it are going to go nuts for what's going to be inside this thing. Developers, I think, are going to have a great time with it. And as far as, like, what can it play? I mean, this thing, 8-bit right up through about PS1 graphics. I mean, that's what's going to be anything in between. But the 16-bit is sort of the sweet spot, right? I mean, a lot of the games that are coming out these days on mobile and streaming, Axiom Verge, I mean, all of these games are like 8 to 16-bit. Yeah. And I really want this thing to be, like, you know, mostly built up with these types of games. But, you know, the PlayStation's going to be retro here pretty soon. It already is, basically. And there's some great games on there and in different art styles and stuff like that. So for a lot of the people that grew up, maybe for the PlayStation era, there could be games similar to those types of games on this thing as well. So it's kind of we're really focusing on the 16-bit, but it's really going to be a lot more capable than that.
Nice. Yeah, personally, I kind of gravitate towards the 32-bit era. I grew up playing 16-bit because I'm going to say I'm a marginally younger man.
But he doesn't look it.
No.
Like, not at all.
Oh, no. Life picked up the hammer of truth and just smacked me early.
Oh, I thought that was the ugly stick.
Well, the hammer of truth is on the end of an ugly stick.
I mean, that does explain the nose.
The wood had to come from somewhere for that sledge. But right. I personally gravitate towards a 32-bit era myself just because I feel like it is the absolute realization of everything the 16-bit era stood for. In terms of the 2D stuff, because you play a game like Mega Man X4, or even like Mega Man 8, which was a weaker game.
Modern game, was it Tetaria, whatever it is. It's like a 16-bit version of Minecraft.
Terraria.
Oh, okay.
It is specifically made to be like 16-bit.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Hadn't heard of it.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome.
And we really want this to be a 2D machine, although there may be some 3D capability in there, but we really are focusing on 2D. But hey, it really depends on the developers, right? I mean, that's
really
what it boils down to.
Man after my own heart. If you have some sort of a FX chip option for someone, or an FX chip-esque option for someone where they can do more 3D graphics, that would be cool as well. So it's more of a specialty thing.
That is, do a barrel roll.
Yeah, I think ultimately that may happen. But we've had lots of developers. I mean, honest to God, we've got probably over 100 developers that have contacted us that are just itching to know how they can start making games for this. And a lot of people online, and like I said earlier before we went on air, just looking at all the comments, the various forums and everything else, that is nuts. This is the worst idea ever. The Jaguar sucks. I would never buy this thing in a million years. To people that are just like, my God, I can't wait for this to come out. This is the dream. Somebody said, this is more important than an Xbox 4 or PS3. This is really an important system in this day and age if we want this to continue. And I believe that in my gut. That's where I'm at. I'm like, if it wasn't me doing this, I would really want somebody to be doing this. Because, I mean, like Resogun, I don't want to buy a PS4 just to play a $20 downloadable, $10 download. If I could get Resogun on a friggin' cartridge, sign me up all day long. I'd pay $50 for that cartridge all day. Same with, you know, Retro City Rampage or even Shovel Knight. How great would it be to have Shovel Knight on a cartridge? And there's just tons of games that have come out over the last, you know, 5 to 8 years on mobile I'm talking to the Super Mega Worm guys, and some of these games that were hugely successful in early on, you know, early mobile days, that they're just dying for a comeback on cartridge, like with a compilation cartridge with like all the Super Mega Worm games on it, or whatever. But we also want new IP born on this. That's what I'm excited about. What's new? What new games are going to get born on this thing potentially that wouldn't have been born if it weren't for this system? Or if they were born on mobile or streaming, they just wouldn't have, maybe it just wouldn't, I don't know what the market, I mean, I know there's a big market for that stuff, but again, I think a cartridge-based system, people buying into bringing this culture back, it could be a pretty big market. And I've just talked to a lot of developers that aren't making any money right now. And so I'm like, why would a developer make a game for this? There's no installed user base. People over here with a million users, millions of users. But yeah, I mean, there was 130,000 iOS games released last year. You know, I know maybe 10 of them. I mean, they're not making any money. And so even if we have a system that's got maybe in the first year, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, I have no idea where this is going to go. But if they're making 10 to 15 bucks royalties on every cartridge they sell, and there's only maybe 40 or 50 games a year released, you've got a really good chance. You remember when the PlayStation came out? The games were released so slow. I'd go to Babbage's like every week looking for new games. There's never anything new coming out. But when a game came out, you bought it. Like everybody bought every game that came out for that thing. So you could literally have 40, 50, 60,000 people all buying your game, making 10, 15 bucks a game, making $500,000, $600,000. These guys aren't making anywhere near that on a game these days. They're lucky to break 10 or 20,000.
No, it takes a marketing campaign the size of the Clash of Clans, or what is that other stupid
For
Candy
those
Crush
of you listening, you Nick almost bashed his head on the mic with that one.
I mean, these are the mobile games that are making money, but it takes that size marketing campaign to get people involved in them.
Well, but those games act on basically like a drug mentality of, here you go, here is our, quote, free game.
Free game.
Yeah.
If you wish to keep playing it, though, you will pay.
Hmm.
Oh, God, will you pay?
If you're patient enough, you can actually get all the way maxed out in Clash of Clans.
Yeah, but who has that kind of time?
Sorry.
Beyond you.
It's my, like, you know, I'm falling asleep. I have an hour before I'm actually going to be there. Might as well actually play for a little bit, you know, for an hour a night type thing. And honestly, at the point I'm at in the game, I only need to do that once a week because I can't do anything else for that week.
I tried to do that with Sonic the Hedgehog CD on iOS, but like you said, you've got a classic retro game that calls for classic retro controls on a touchscreen.
Yeah.
And that becomes a harrowing waste of time.
Yeah. I mean, the way I am with my timer, get it free in 20 minutes, I won't touch it again ever. That's the way I am. I got like 20, 30 games on my phone, and I lose interest just almost immediately.
Yeah. No, I blasted through Plants vs. Zombies in like 3 weeks. And I haven't been back to it since.
Took you 3 weeks?
Well, God, that's because I kept going back and playing it again and again and again. I had a real problem for a while.
He's so slow.
We call him retro for a reason.
Yeah.
I beat
it's
it.
It's a term
like,
of endearment.
I beat it in like 4 days, dying only twice. It's
anybody
not a
else
hard
got a question
game
for Mike? Because I've got another one and I don't want to jump
Yeah, please, James.
Well, I was going to say, the big noticeable thing is the, Nick so thoughtfully described it as, the, in one of our conversations, the corpse of the unborn
the skin of
jaguar.
A dead man.
Yes, skin of a dead man. Well, not really dead. Unborn.
The jaguar was born.
Well,
was
but these aren't jaguars. These are new.
It was still born. I mean, it's the same.
It's like the One Ring, you know, but it made from the same mold.
No, that's
of the
just
One
it.
Ring.
Like, it's the same casing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not. They didn't gut jaguars. Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, no, but I was going to say, on that same level where you've got something that's old, but you've got a lot of new stuff you can do, including, say, like 3D printing technology, you know, go back like 30 years and you've got the original Zeldas came with, you know, like their gold foil boxes. That was their big thing. For this, people could have the option they could kind of print their own boxes for them, you know, some sort of plastic cover
Are you talking about, like, the casing for the cartridge itself? Or are you talking about the box it comes in? Okay.
Yeah.
So people meaning the developer
gamer? No, I'm asking, would they be willing to, you know, do something? Are you using the same cartridges as before, or do you have carte blanche?
No.
Pun intended.
No, well, we're using the same cartridges.
Okay.
This is a translucent one.
Ooh.
Oh.
Now,
I want to fill it with M&Ms.
Have the Atari name in it. Ours will say retro here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, our plan is to really get fun with this. I mean, the case, I can print this thing off in any color people want. I can really highly consider making a wood grain one just to see what the heck it would look like.
Do it.
I've got the tune. It's 20 minutes. That was a whole story in and of itself, going up and acquiring this Jaguar.
I want a wood case.
I would love to hear about acquiring the Jaguar tooling, because that... I know that the Jaguar case has had a storied history for people who are big on the Atari Age forums. I mean, we're talking about something that for years has been the Imagine Oral Imaging platform. Yep. So did you guys, like, purchase the housing from Imagine? Or did you purchase
from,
it?
From Imagine, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's where we got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I found these on Atari Age, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. I remember the guy put them up on eBay.
Uh-huh.
And they never sold. And for the longest time, there was a lot of people on Atari Age wanting to get those because he was talking about melting them down and recycling the steel and everything else. And everybody's like, no, you can't let that happen. And but ultimately, they couldn't figure out how to purchase it. I mean, it's like 9,000 pounds of steel.
Yeah.
And they were all talking about pooling their money together and, you know, having somebody take these someplace just to, so they can translucent Jaguar cases like I just did for a bunch of them.
I don't think the steel shortage is so bad that we need to melt down the molds for Jaguars.
Yeah, but if you have these molds that you can't do anything with, what else are you going to do them but sell them for scrap?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's basically what was going
to
happen.
Sell them
now.
To Mike Kennedy
Steve
so
over
that
Imagine.
He can build a really awesome gaming system.
Fill them with chocolate.
Yeah. Actually, that's not a terrible idea.
Chocolate Jaguar?
I want one for Easter next year.
But Steve really loved the design of the Jaguar, and he couldn't bring himself down. And he thought probably sooner or later some idiot is going to come around. And behold, in December, this idiot calls him, and I ask him, you still have those? Yeah, I still have them. He goes, I get calls on them quite often. You know, we've had tons of people say they're going to buy them, but it just never materializes. And I was the guy. You know, I called him in December. I brought a film crew up there, Dave Danzera, who did, he's going to kill me. They're working on No Princess in the Castle right now, a video documentary on women in gaming, which is going to be really cool. And then he did the Video Craze. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Video Craze documentary, but it's a great one.
Speaking of documentaries.
Looking for great, on the collecting of arcade games, the Video Craze is a great one to find, get. But so I brought him up there with me, and we kind of documented this whole trip from driving from L.A. to San Francisco. We stopped by Atari's corporate headquarters when they were on Barragas, where the Jaguar was, and just did a quick kind of drive, and then drove on to Imagine and met with Steve, and he kind of brought us in. And this was a fascinating trip because – the product that Imagine made, which is a dental camera.
Right.
Before they – here's how the whole thing happened. So in 98, Stoser, which was the name of the injection mold company that was blow molding or doing the injection molding for the Jaguar, also did the injection molding for their hot rod dental camera. And so one of the kids of the – I think the guy who owned Stoser – said, hey, I think this Atari thing is going to go out of business, and we're doing the molding for them. And this thing, the Jaguar, looks almost identical to their hot rod. And it was crazy. The product they were making looked like a big Jag, but it had the dome in the middle, the rounded sides. It looked just freaking like it. And so what Steve liked about the Jaguar was that it was basically almost identical to his design, but it was a lot sleeker and smaller. And so they could make it a smaller product. And the thing is, they had a handle on this thing, and the dentist would carry this from room to room and hang it on the wall. And then they would go into the people's mouths with the whatever, and the cartridge saved the data for that patient. And over the course of the last few years, everything's gone USB, so they don't use the product anymore. However, they're still in that business. They've evolved, and so he's just had these things just sitting there. And so he's been printing off, he injection molded a bunch of white ones, I think for their products that they never used. So he's been selling those on eBay to Jaguar collectors over the last couple of years. And so some of these white ones have made it out into the world, and the Jag collectors are kind of retrofitting their standard Jag with the white Jag. But anyway, that's kind of how that's how they acquired them in 98. Atari went through some sort of a liquidation and put the tooling up for sale. They released all rights and copyrights, anything having to do with the Jag. And I've got all the original letters from Atari with original signatures signing over all rights, licenses, whatever for the Jag. And I got all of their D-size prints, like the original prints.
He just walked Jaguar. Away from us.
Let me get one of these guys out here. I got a whole wad of prints. So, like, here's the original letters. I don't know if you can see this.
Yeah. Nice.
Basically, releasing all right title and interest in the Atari Jaguar. And then, of course, those were all assigned over to me when I bought them from Steve. But let me find this really.
So, do you own the rights to the Jaguar hardware as well?
All of the drawing. It doesn't say, it's very unspecific.
Okay.
Reuse that anyway, but for the design and everything, and of course, you know, those copyrights have all run out by now anyway. It doesn't matter. It's been over 20 some years.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find, is this, let's see.
You can't see though, but Nick is salivating.
Yeah, a little bit.
He's got a beard to catch it.
Yeah, no, this is really
the
cool.
The flavor saver helps out again.
Yes.
Just trying to find the one that shows, like, the... Is this it? Oh, yeah, check this out. Check this shit out. This is awesome.
Oh, man.
So this is, like, the D-size print of the Jag. But, I mean, I've got all the prints of all of it, and the guts of it, everything. And these are all dated April 20th of 94... Atari Corporation, 1196 Borregas, which is the building we stopped at in Sunnyvale. Because I'm really documenting this whole process, somewhat for the Kickstarter sizzle video, right?
Right.
And, I just really want people to see this whole progression of this. And, I just think it's going to be super fascinating for people to see, what happened to the Jag after Atari got rid of it, what we're doing with it. That's why I've just put some real unprofessional videos of the blow molding or the injection molding process.
Yeah, I caught that, and it was
weird.
Very
cool,
see them.
You know, to see these things coming out. It's not real photogenic, but it's just neat to see this, and people are just fascinated by it. So I'm really trying to vest people. We'll let them see how this is all coming together. I'm working on with a guy back in the UK that's doing a ton of 3D modeling for me right now. We're really working on the branding of it because, of course, we don't want this thing to look anything like the Jaguar. And I think when we're done with it, it's really going to have its own cool look with the same logo and brand that we're using for the magazine, the retro brand. A lot of people are like, why would they call it retro? It sounds like it's going to be a cheap knockoff Famiclone or something. And I totally can understand that. But we've got this magazine, Retro Video Game Magazine. It's going into Barnes & Noble now. We're up to over 30,000 circulation. And so we're really building this brand. And so this is basically going to use the same. It's a really photogenic, beautiful logo, the Retro Video Game System. And so that's why we're doing it, because we're going to sort of, again, part of this is bringing the culture back. We started with the print magazine, bringing print back and making print magazines fun again. And that's what we're doing with the magazine. People are loving it. And I do have some promo codes to hand out here a little bit for our digital Mortal Kombat issue that we just released. You guys want me to do some code giving right now?
Sure.
Yeah.
Actually.
While we're talking about it?
Yeah.
So anyway, we've got 10 free downloads of our Mortal Kombat issue, which is just going to start hitting circulation next week in print. But it's 76 pages. We got a great Mortal Kombat cover. If you go to shopreadretro.com, And then you want to get to the Mortal Kombat issue. And you'll see a big slider window with Mortal Kombat X, because we're timing this in relation with the launch of X tomorrow. And the download code, and this is all caps and it is case sensitive, is MKX. MKX. And we got 10 free downloads of that issue, so you guys can check it out and see. But again, to go to it, shopreadretro.com, go to the Mortal Kombat page for that magazine, and you'll just go through like your purchasing it. It'll say discount code. You put it in. Instead of $3, which is the normal price for the digital issue, it'll be free. And you guys can check that out. But yeah, so we're going to use the magazine like Nintendo Power. We're going to probably lengthen the magazine 6 to 8 pages. We'll have feature stories in there and previews. We're not going to review our own games, but we'll preview our games. We'll have interviews with developers, you know, games that are coming out on the system, and using the magazine to kind of promote the console. And they're going to go hand in hand. And everybody that gets a console will at least get a free digital subscription to the magazine, and potentially we may have a print magazine package as well. So mailboxes are fun again. You're going to be getting this great retro gaming magazine, and you'll have the console to go hand in hand with it. And we're just really excited about how the two fit together. And so yeah, it's going to be rebranded. We got the 3D modeling happening 2 to 3 weeks from now. Well, hopefully less than 3 weeks. We'll kind of get rid of kind of the cheesy homebrew pictures that I'm putting of this thing up and actually have a nice 3D model of what this thing will actually look like with the controller mated up with the console. And I think it's going to be pretty gorgeous, and people are going to be really surprised when they see it.
Nice.
I'll take a breath now.
Okay, well, let me see here. We actually do have one listener question so far.
All right.
So I can fling that at you. And this is one of our dear old listeners. This is NDRK89, Pat. And Pat is asking, what's this device got to entice those of us without any nostalgia for the 8 and 16-bit gaming eras? And I feel like we kind of covered. It's really a return to form for people who prefer to have a collection, some form of physical media that they can not only store on their shelf and show off, but they could bring around.
I think it's also the fact that you're going to have that play style where you're not looking at, oh, I have to connect to the internet to play my freaking
game.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good question. So to entice people, and, you know, there's a lot of collectors out there who have the old systems or emulated systems, Retron 5s. They got tons of old games that they can play. Why would I buy a new system to play 8 and 16-bit style games when people are still making 16-bit games for the Genesis homebrew games and the SNES and the NES right now? It's a huge homebrew community, right? Well, I think there's a couple of different ways to answer this. Number one is, we want to have games on here that are exclusive to this system. So if you want to play a new sequel to maybe one of your favorite 16-bit games that's never been released on mobile, never been released in any other way, we can bring out a new sequel to some of these games from some of these big publishers.
General Chaos and, 2.
Yeah, I love General Chaos.
Hey, we talked to the developer of General Chaos when they launched the Kickstarter.
Who was that? Who is it? It was...
I remember his name all of a sudden.
You remember who it was?
We'll look it up, but... yeah, it was really, really fun interview.
It was
when they were they were still trying to get what was their goal, like $100,000?
It was like $100,000 for the General Chaos sequel that they were
they
trying
didn't
to
get
raise.
It. They didn't hit it.
No, unfortunately. Mm. Which
I love the original.
Shame.
Yeah, yeah. Was it the original team?
Yes. The creators.
Oh,
the,
cool.
They had all their stuff with like Rampage as well, but. We had a really good talk with them.
Well, anyway, I mean, again, this is another platform that could make those types of deals possible if we can get a big enough installed user base. Part of the really interesting thing about the way this Kickstarter is going to work, too, is we're not only kickstarting the console, but we're kickstarting the console and the first set of launch titles. So think about it. When Ouya launched, they didn't have to have any games launch with it because it was Android and there was going to be games for it no matter what. You know, for us, it's really important that I want to launch this thing with at least 12 games. And I'd like to reveal all of those on the Kickstarter. And there is a chance that we may have stretch goals for some really big sequels that, you know, if we hit 5 million, you know, this game comes out, which is a game that's got this huge following from the 16-bit era, and there hasn't been a sequel in years. And so we're going after three or four really big titles that will just blow people's minds. So part of the reason this is delaying a little bit into the summer is we're still working on bringing, I mean, the hardware is taking us a little bit longer as well, but we're also working on bringing, you know, having games that we can announce at the Kickstarter that will be on this game or on this system. So again, exclusives, games that you're not going to be able to get anywhere else, would be a draw to this. Number two is we do want to have some ports of super popular mobile games that have they've never been on a permanent cartridge before that we feel are good enough that should be preserved, that people are going to want to play these well into the future. You know, we're talking to Brian Provinciano for Retro City Rampage and having this available for launch on cartridge. That would, I think a lot of people would love to get that game on a cartridge. Now he sold it on disc, right? For PS4.
I think it was three.
Maybe it was three or four, but limited run, sold out of them. Now they're going, I think. So that's the other thing. And then, you know, new and original games too that we want born out. So we're going to price these things kind of accordingly. So let's say it's a newer game, a newer studio. It may be a $20 to $25 game, which isn't too bad.
Actually, that's really reasonable. Because one thing I was going to ask you, because this was a concern of mine with the new marketplace and media being as disposable as it is and just coming digitally, so your production cost are nil. I was going to ask about the production cost of cartridges, because that was one big problem the Nintendo 64 faced back in the 90s for the early 00s.
Yeah.
So it sounds like
First of all, we're making everything in-house. I'm not farming any of it out, other than the PCB. That's going to be made in America, hopefully here locally in Orange County. I'm going to build the system. I mean, my background in, you know, for the last 20 years has been in lean manufacturing and manufacturing proficiency and ergonomics and all of this stuff. So I'm actually going to use what I've done for my real job in 20 years in my own small little factory. And so, you know, we're going to have total control over the production and the manufacturing of this thing. And so I think we can keep costs down quite a bit. I mean, the polycarb and the injection molding to make these systems and make these cartridges is hardly anything, to be honest with you. It's so minuscule. You know, most of the cost obviously is going to be the PCB in the cartridges and in as far as the hardware of the console. But we're really shooting for $150 price point on the console. There's a chance it could go up to 180, but you know, 150 is really where I'd like it to be. And we, you know, depending on how well the Kickstarter does or doesn't, if it does really well and we, you know, pull an Ouya numbers, for God's sake, if it's possible, you know, and you see that there's tons and tons of demand in this 45-day period, because we're probably going to do a 45-day Kickstarter, we may take it to street retailers after that. But again, with this new way and with the internet and our ability to sell direct to consumer, that's really inviting. Flashing the games onto these cartridges as you sell them, not having tons of inventory, not selling tons of inventory to stores and have to worry about the buyback and getting into that whole rat race, right? Consoles may be sold in stores. We really want to get these games onto cartridges fast if somebody orders them online. So they get them at least in the US maybe in 3 days. So real quick turnaround. Nice. Fair cost. I mean, homebrew titles. I mean, Pure Solar was like $70 on the Genesis.
I was actually, just going to ask you about games like Pure Solar, because know that was.
And we're talking to Watermelon. They're all about bringing these games on. They've got two new games, I think they said, coming out, or maybe one just came out. These guys are great. They really believe in what we're doing. They'd love to support us. But you know, these homebrew games have $60-$70. But they're still relatively low quantities. We really feel that quantity-wise, I mean, for our Kickstarter, we'll probably, you know, have somewhere around a $1 to $1.3 million goal. That's about 5,000 to 7,000 people. That's not a bad number for these guys who are used to selling a couple hundred cartridges for the SNES or the Genesis. So that's what I'm talking about. We're not going to sell them for $60-$70. We'd sell, you know, a title like Pure Solar maybe for $40. $39.90. I remember what they were selling it for, but I think it was around 70 bucks.
I think it was actually 80 because I actually looked into buying bucks. Pierre Solar, and I was like,
"Oh, yeah." But there will be a bigger market, I think, for this. And so again, it kind of comes back to the other thing is, I'm not making this system to be a niche 5,000 user product. I mean, I really feel that we're going to take this to the colleges that are teaching game design, give them dev kits. I think it's going to be tremendous to let them, because there's some incredible games coming out of the schools these days. And I know a lot of the people that are involved with the game schools of various game schools, and they love this idea of you know, taking games that are made in their program and somehow making them available. So it earns money for that program and funds that program. Parents who maybe grew up in the 16-bit days who have children that are 5 to 10, 15 years old, whatever, it's going to be a great first system for them. It's the kind of system we all grew up on, except for Nick, who grew up with the PlayStation.
Hey, I had a TurboGrafx 16 in 91.
Okay. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I
had the original
breakout, you know, main.
I had that before.
And
hold on, this guy's ripping on Nick. Let's hear him out. I like where
one
this is going.
One of us.
Yeah. But anyway, taking it to the masses and kind of and creating a system that's not just for the nerdy niche gamers. And I say that with all respect because I'm one of them. But breaking it out a little bit mainstream. And of course, most of the people buying it on Kickstarter may be, you know, our type. That'd be another great game to bring back on here, by the way. I'm really doing this to again, I hope this thing reaches Ouya type numbers and, 50, 60,000 people. I don't know if it will. I'm not really sure what to expect, to be honest with you guys. It's either going to barely skitter by the goal if it hits it. I know this sounds like I'm covering all possibilities here, or I think it's going to just kill it. But I'm not really sure. I mean, what do you guys think the market is for something like this? After you've heard me kind of talk about it and the types of games and why we're bringing it back, I've talked to lots of games.
Can I be honest?
And they're ones that really feel that they don't like the game industry these days with the digital downloads and stuff. And they appreciate these games that we've grown up with. And I think it's going to resonate even with them. And I just hope it's not too late to get these cartridges into these younger gamers' hands. So
I think the hipster culture is going to love it.
Grow with it.
say that one more time.
I said I think the hipster culture is really going to love him and this system. But in order to get that culture involved, you're really going to need to start looking at marketing through the maker community, the DIY community. Hit up people like Hackaday, Maker Magazine, get them to do some promotion for you. Get those kind of people involved because those are the people that are still hacking with the old hardware. They're actually opening up 2600s and seeing, can I make a handheld portable out of this? They're still playing with those systems.
Yeah.
You know, making Raspberry Pis that can play all the old Atari games or Sega games. And so, I mean, Ben Heck just recently did an episode where he put I believe it was a old GameCube or a Sega into a handheld.
A Sega what?
You got me. You'd have to look back.
There's only one Sega, right, Nick?
The Saturn? You can't see my face, ladies and gentlemen.
But
about to get stabbed.
The point was that, you know, they're still playing with these old systems and, you know, making portables, handhelds, showing how to make the emulators run on a Raspberry Pi, things like that. And there's definitely traction with these systems. So a new console system, cartridge-based system, definitely there's going to be a group out there that are going to be interested out of the gate as, oh, I don't have to go build my own or roll my own Atari. I can buy this system and build my games.
I always roll my own Atari, man.
Hey, that's what they're doing. What can I say? But
yeah, I talked to Ben actually about a year ago about coming on board the hardware team. It was fascinating because he's just like, I don't know if I would consider myself like a new console hardware guy. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Oh, Ben Heck is like,
I didn't understand it at all. It was very interesting talking with him. He was interested in everything. And then we kind of ended up, I went kind of a different different way and brought in some other folks. But I talked with him a few hours about it. And, again, thought it was a great idea. Didn't think he would maybe be the right person for it for whatever reason.
Yeah, but if you can reach out to those communities, I think that's where you're going to find your people who are interested in backing you before you have a product. Once you have the product in production and you have a user base out there, people creating dev kits, which I want to come back to that concept when I'm done with this other rant. If you can get those people, that first 5 to 10,000 people buying systems and developing games, they're going to bring their friends. You know, it's going to blossom out from there. You're going to need that groundswell movement first.
Well, I think this is going to go pretty viral. You know, with our magazine, we've got Jeremy Parrish working on it, Chris Kohler working on it, Sean Baby working on it, writing for me, Cap Bailey, Alex Hall, Andy Eddy. We've got sort of this team that I think will and they're all retro gamers. And so I think that they will I hope that they'll support us. They've supported me with the magazine, you know, doing some awesome writing for me and everything else. And they've combined got a few hundred thousand followers. And, you know, we Daniel Kaiser's on board from Game Trailers and Spike. You know, Jeff Keighley's a friend of his. I mean, we're all retro gamers. We all want to see this continue. So I think that we're going to have a pretty nice kind of and I've not even got this out to mainstream yet. I mean, maybe your show, you know, eventually it's going to get picked up. I kind of wanted to break all of this ourselves on retro, on our magazine side and on our website when I have more details. But I think it's going to go pretty viral. I mean, for God's sake, it's the Jaguar being rebranded as a new cartridge-based console. I mean, it went viral when they had stories of the Imagine, you know, when everybody found out it was a dental kit. It went viral. So I just think it's going to go pretty viral. And, you know, hopefully when they understand a little bit more about why we're doing it and the whole culture, that it sinks in a little bit and they just don't think we're nuts. But I think it's going to be pretty well received. And I mean, if the Facebook page is any indication that we've started, I mean, it's active. I mean, I'll post a question. We'll have 100 comments in a day, and it's a relatively small page. And so we're trying to sort of build up, maybe to 5,000 to 8,000 people. We're adding almost 1,000 people a week into that thing. And if we can grow that, so we have 5,000 to 8,000 people in there, 6,000 to 8,000 people before we go live with the Kickstarter, I'm hoping that that will light it and kind of fan that flame and get us some really early growth. But I think it's going to go pretty viral. I think it's going to be pretty much everywhere. I would hope.
So talk to me about dev kits. You mentioned dev kits.
Yeah. So
is this going to be one of the contributor level rewards on the Kickstarter that if I contribute X number of dollars, I get an initial dev kit?
Yeah. Really, because the dev kit is only going to probably be a different cartridge.
Oh.
You know, we're going to probably have the cartridge in the console. You're going to USB to the cartridge. There'll be a reset button either on the cartridge or the back of the console. You know, we're trying to keep as many brains out of the console as possible and put it in the cartridge.
So essentially, I would download my game. I would develop my game on my PC, download it to the cartridge, start the system, play my game, and then if I'm happy with my game, I keep my game, send it to you to get it mass produced, that kind of thing.
Pretty much, yeah. So we're part of what we want to do too is kind of keep this sort of open source where if you make a game and you want to just buy 50 cartridges to sell to your friends or to sell at an expo or to sell on eBay or your own website or whatever, that we'll do that for you. Now, we won't publish the game. We won't sell it through our user base. We won't put it in our store. But it will give you, it will give developers an opportunity who make a game, maybe not the greatest game, but that want to get it onto a cartridge for this console and sell it publicly, that they can do that. We'll do the box, cool, we'll print the manual, we'll make the cartridge, we'll maybe have a minimum order, and they can buy them. Now, if a game is presented to our dev team, we'll have a kind of a developer support team. If a game is presented to our team that let's say you make a game and you want to buy 50 copies, we look at that game and go, holy crap, that's a great game, Ben. We think we can take this to our installed user base of 20,000 people, and then we do a royalty deal. Ben on the left.
That's you.
My left.
Well, your screen video actually back. Cut out. We can't.
Yeah, we had no idea what was going on with the video.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, but you're back.
It's all good.
Although, you know, you mentioned instruction guides. Where do you stand on that? Do they actually have to make an instruction guide? Because that would be great.
Yeah, well, no, that's part of it, right? Is a nice illustrated instruction manual that comes in with the box. Hell yeah.
Yeah, because now there's just like the one page, which is like, visit our website. And you look at the back, it's just white. Like, what? This is terrible.
And then
terrible.
You visit their website, and all it is more marketing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The only way to learn how to play the game is to play the in-game tutorial.
Yeah, no. We want to bring all of that back. But yeah, we'll probably have the dev level in there that will just include the cartridge. But you know, if it's just the cartridge we're sending out, we'll probably be sending those out left and right to people for nothing. So it may not be a level. It may be just like, hey, I'm a developer. You know, here's a game that I've done in the past or that I'm working on. We'll send you one for free. But it'll work with any factory system.
So for us hardware hackers, are we going to be locked into the controllers that you ship with the system? Or are we going to be able to...
I mean, we're going to have two USB ports. Now, we are talking to... right now, I mean, again, we were going to design our own controller. Then in one of our issues of Retro, we did talk about Interworks, you know, Pro-U controller. And I looked at just the design of the controller, and I thought, my God, you know, that's got everything in one. It's got the dual analog sticks, which are on there because lots of developers that we're talking about want the dual analog sticks. They want to make games for that. We have just as many guys or people that want to make games for D-pad. And this just, you know, it's got a really nice blending of both. Now, Interworks has had issues with the connectivity with the Wii, but we're going to be USB. There's going to be no, we may have Bluetooth yet. That's sort of one of these things kind of hinging on cost. At this point, but I think there's Bluetooth USB adapters, aren't there?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you've got a USB adapter, we can make that work either way.
Either way, that's what I'm thinking. So our plan is to pack in. We're working with Interworks. They're actually working on getting me a USB, you know, hardwired USB controller branded for us right now. They're working on it, but you know, we would really love for anybody to take your favorite USB controller and plug it into this, or plug a keyboard into this thing, for God's sake. If the developer works a keyboard into their game, or it's an RPG or whatever, great. Now, we're also talking about putting 2 9 pins on as well. So you can plug in your Genesis language. Controllers, your Atari controllers. And if as long as developers, and again, we're working on, you know, figuring out ways to maybe you can choose what type of controller on a menu screen that you want to plug into this thing. And we'll put all the controllers in.
Mike, what if I want to plug into your machine a Steel Battalion controller? because that is the only controller that I have ever seen that as soon as I saw it, I wanted to have sex with it.
Oh!
Yeah. Well, you know, you might have to still buy your Xbox.
There is a Steel Battalion controller over there, and it is sticky.
That was too much information.
Ben has been here, like, playing with it.
Yeah.
Ben.
I might have stepped
that
out
Ben.
Of room. That Ben.
That Ben.
All Bens are the same.
No, we're not.
Ben 10. It's like 10 clones of the same Ben.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, Mike. This was getting a little too serious. had to throw in some of our normal show so our listeners would understand that they were actually listening to Retro Nick.
Oh, right. Cockfucker. No. Let me just go through all the words that we typically use in an hour of this show.
Can we do some cartoons? Cumsicle, I believe, is required.
Sprag to mind, but yeah.
Can we talk about some cartoons real quick as a segue, just so that, you know, the listeners know it's us?
No. I actually, that does lead me to an interesting line of questioning, though. So,
right.
You've got all the Jaguar molds, so I assume that means you've got Jaguar accessories as well, namely... just the base console.
Console and cartridge only.
Okay, gotcha. So you don't actually have the Jaguar CD molds.
We, some of that, it turned up, was missing. So
okay.
I have some of it, but not all of it.
Somebody burned that.
So I'm probably going to donate or give that to a museum of some sort.
Okay.
If they'll ship it, you know, if they'll take it.
That's,
you know,
cool.
Put it under a glass case, you know, or a plexiglass.
I maintain my previous position. Fill it with chocolate.
There you go.
If someone gave me a chocolate Jaguar for Valentine's Day, I would be flattered. And a little turned on.
That would be cool.
What is it filled with? You know, the standard hardware. You made a shell casing for a Jaguar and then put Jaguar parts in it.
And it don't run very hot. Just don't play it on the beach.
You've got a dehumidifier, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, you'll be fine.
Although it's full right now. It is spring. But no, actually, that does lead me to another question.
Yes.
Let me think. So, obviously, there's no plans for a CD at all. We're gonna throw
no,
that out the window
no.
right now. Sorry, that's
16-bit humor.
Get out.
I guess my
that's 2-bit humor.
Oh shit! You're too quick for me. Anyway. How do you feel personally about the Jaguar? Because the Jaguar is sort of a polarizing system. There's really two camps. There's people who haven't really heard of it, and there's people that despise it, and then there's, like, weirdos like me who don't fall into either, who appreciate it for what it was. And that was really sort of an anomaly of Atari in its death throes. There was some really unique stuff on there. I still believe it is the de facto version of Tempest 2000 on the Jaguar.
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. No, it's incredible. The music, the graphics, everything. And then you've got games like Flipout, which are unique. But yeah,
I love Flipout.
Yeah, Flipout's great.
I love it. I love Flipout. People hate Flipout. I love Flipout.
You know, it's a really unique puzzle game.
Yeah.
And really, when you get used to how it plays, it's addictive.
It is addictive as hell, yeah. It's a great game.
So I take it you like the Jaguar.
I do like the Jaguar. I've got one here. I love Tempest 2000. I got a retro a modded paddle controller for that. It's great.
Awesome.
I love Power Drive Rally. I love Doom on the Jaguar. I mean, I didn't have a PC back in the day. I had Jag and the Doom version on there. I mean, it was amazing to me.
Nice.
Return to Castle Wolfenstein 3D or whatever, it's great.
Now tell me, did you ever play Ultra Vortech?
Was it a fighting game?
It was a Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
game,
it was
really.
Like really bad. Wasn't it really bad?
Oh.
Fight for Life. I mean, there was a couple really bad.
Thank
games.
You.
Be still my bleeding heart. No, it is bad, but it's lovable because
no,
it isn't. It has the poop fatality.
No, it's not good.
Down, down, back, forward, back. C A B.
You're the
hold
only
B.
person who knows this.
No, I got a Jaguar because I actually lived in Pueblo, Colorado when Atari was going under. And we were just south of Colorado Springs, and that's where Atari had a major warehouse. So when they started liquidating Jaguar units and games, all the KB Toys in the area were picking them up. So I got a Jaguar right at the horizon of the N64 for, I think it was like $30 for the console.
Yeah. Good. Defender 2000 rocks on it. Another Jeff Minter game, you know. I mean, Jeff's great. We're trying to talk to Jeff about bringing some of his games onto this
nice.
Thing. I like the system a lot. I mean, it's certainly worth owning. Tempest never gets old. I mean, if that's the only thing you play on it, it is an absolute blast. There's a good 15 or so games on it that are definitely worth owning for it, I'd say.
Nice. And that leads me to...
But not Nick's fighting game at all.
Oh,
yeah. Or White Man Can't Jump. That one's sort of bad.
I never played it, but I was like, is this a movie that really needed a video game tie-in? It did use the multiplayer tap, though, so you could play with three other weirdos.
Yeah, you could get Wesley Snipes and
Woody
Harrelson. And I can't name another person in it, but you can get them to apologize to you.
It's like if you run into George Clooney, you're like, bat nipples. He's like, how much was movie admission in 1995?
Well, I saw it in a matinee, Mr. Clooney, so it was like $3.25. All right. I've got a $5.
I just want to be able to plug a Makey Makey into this thing, and then I'll be happy. Does anybody else know what a Makey Makey is?
No, quiet, Ben.
A Makey Makey sounds like that thing you do to make children.
Woohoo! No, Makey Makey is actually this really cool Arduino style based thing where it uses capacitive touch and you can make anything into a controller.
Ooh.
Like there's pictures where people have made pianos out of, or videos of people using.
How many of them are dildos?
Haha.
I'm not joking.
I don't know. But basically, They made pianos out of bananas and so forth, but it's key mapping to a old controller style thing.
I have actually heard of this thing.
Yeah,
now that you mention it.
I got one for Christmas from my mother-in-law about 2 years ago, and I haven't had a use for it yet. And this sounds perfect because I can actually, you know, make something to work with something that actually is still usable.
Yeah,
I mean, today's games, there's just nothing you can do with six controls, seven controls. You need, you know, how many buttons are on the new PS controller?
I don't know. 20? Same as the first PS controller, I think.
No, because now you've got the triggers.
Oh, yeah, and you've got the share. Well, no, the original had the share buttons. Or the, not the share buttons, sorry. The original had the triggers as well.
But it didn't have the ones on the upper side. It's got two up there now.
Yeah, but it's because they're trying to keep up with PC
games. Like 15
games.
Buttons? I think 15.
Where you like can, like, just map all everything you want to do. You know, like, that's how my buddy went through Warhammer. It wasn't like you just pushed a button and all of a sudden it did some crazy thing that if you actually had to individually
setting macros.
Push the button, you would have been screwed. Yeah, I mean, that's really why they're growing in the number of buttons on each controller.
Right, so being able to use a Makey or something like that where I can make my own custom controller and do the key assignments, that would be awesome.
That would be cool, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think...
Well, you said USB and keyboard, and those were the two magic words in order to make the Makey happy. So,
yeah, yeah. It probably worked. Well, you can test it out. You can be the guinea pig on that.
Sweet. Send me a dev kit.
What you should do is you should put out an app that's just, you know, this is the smartphone controller, and when they open it, it's like, get a real controller. This is not a good idea for a controller. It is a flat screen. It has no feedback. There's nothing tactile about this. Go buy a real controller. We've made it easy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but now suddenly I'm wondering. Not so much about controllers and what have you. Although, is there going to be a light gun? It's like, wait, this just popped in my head. If you guys had a light gun, I would totally be in, but I don't think anyone else would be because no one still has a tube.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, that, exactly. Like I take it for advantage the fact that I have three tube TVs, so an NES Zapper is not an obsolete tool in my house.
Well, you know how the NES Zapper worked, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because I mean it will still work if you can get a high enough contrast LED screen.
Well, it's not just a contrast. The problem is that newer TVs will also adjust the signal rate. So, like, the actual speed of the picture coming through, with an analog set, it was, like, one set speed. But with analog or with new digital technology, it's just rendered them obsolete. Because even if you get, like, the true black and white contrast, the timing's still going to be off. And the light trick doesn't even work, where you point it at your light bulb and you're like, nah! I don't like losing Duck Hunt. That is, I have no friends!
That is part of the reason why my Silent Scope rifle is still... living at your house.
Yeah. No tube TV.
No, actually, I do have a tube TV.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Hold on. Is it Silent Scope or Super Scope? Pretty sure...
Both of his are living here. The Silent Scope set and the Super Scope for the SNES.
I was going to say, I was looking at the Super Scope.
Oh, no, Silent Scope's back there.
Super duper Super
on top of the CDX. Next to the Atari mug.
I see a Jaguar box up there, and I see a TurboGrafx hard case, I think, up there. And
you
what
do?
Is that, a ZX Spectrum?
That is a ZX Spectrum.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
What the hell?
It's a Spectrum Plus, sir.
Yeah, well, I had a Timex Sinclair, Sinclair growing up.
Oh,
made
nice.
Lots of little programs on my Timex Sinclair, and then graduated the C64 and ultimately an Apple IIc in high school.
Nice.
Which was awesome. I have one in the background there. You can kind of see the screen a little over here next to my touch. Oops.
I actually did see that when your video worked.
Yeah, the video has cut out.
Oh, my video's not working right now?
Yeah, we haven't had video for a while, but...
Well, it's weird because you're...
It's okay.
We can see it as a small video, but when you start talking and it switches to the big video, we lose you.
Oh, you know what? It's hot. It's hot down here. I think my PC's about ready to explode right now. So.
Oh, gotcha.
For whatever reason, I don't know if it's like this blue snowball mic or whatever. I mean, this thing, I've actually got it elevated up on a thing of batteries because the underside of my computer right now is like 200 degrees. I literally think it's about ready to like take off or something.
More than likely, it's just Google Hangout shit in the bed.
Yeah.
Huh?
I said more than likely, it's just Google Hangout shitting the bed.
Oh, yeah, more than likely. More likely than not.
You've done nothing wrong, sir.
I've not lost your video, and I can make myself big. That didn't sound very good. But,
ooh, that's no, that, been Retro Nick right Radio.
Actually, welcome to Retro Nick Radio.
There's the bumper for the show right there.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
It'll be a soundboard by next week.
I can make myself bigger.
I just need, no. I need you make to turn that, around.
Make that the boot up noise. You know, you have Sega.
Well, no, like the Jaguar.
It can be, I make myself bigger. I don't know much about this console, but I like it.
I love it. You turn it on, it's like, I can make myself bigger.
What?
Okay, so let me think. What else do I want to ask about this thing? Because, like, I had the one gag question, which was CD add-on?
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's not enough to just reclaim history. We have to relive it. Let me think. Okay, so you've had hundreds of developers sign on to, or not sign on, but
they
or
so.
Yeah, yes, and they're really interested to work with you.
Yeah.
Out of all the properties, I mean, how many of them that you're going to reveal with your Kickstarter are things that are utterly unique, and then how many are utterly hearkening back to a bygone era? And sorry, I'm three beers in, so if that didn't make any sense, we can just go on to another question.
It sounded like this. You mean they're all going to harken back to bygone era?
What he means is,
I guess, if they're sequelized or if they're spin-offs of another
sequelized
property.
Or new or ports.
Right, sorry.
You know what? I'm not really totally sure yet. I mean, I would say, like, if we have at least 12 games, I'd like it sort of to be like 4, 4, and 4. I'm working with Mike Micah and the guys of it over at Other Ocean. They just did iDarb. You know, Mike's a great retro fan. And I'm actually going to be up there having lunch with these guys next week. And they are, Mike, you guys know Mike Micah? Is the name ringing a bell? You guys, anybody know Mike?
Not actually, no.
You know, iDarb, the game you just did, it was Xbox exclusive right now. It's a multiplayer retro, gorgeous looking thing. You can Google IDARB, iDarb, when you have a chance, you can check it out.
Sure.
But, he's done work for Capcom and Namco and Konami and Sega, and great relationships that go back many, many, many years with these developers doing third-party development for them. And he is sort of our in to some of those types of publishers. And we are talking with a couple of them right now about another pack-in game that would be taken from an old arcade license that I think would be just ripe for a sequel. Actually, it would be a trequel. It would be the third one in the lineage. There's been two, hint. Of course, that's not a really great hint because there's been lots of games with a single sequel. I don't know the answer, but I want to have a good mix, right? I want to have some original IP. We've announced Adventures of Tiny Knight from Collector Vision as one of the pack-ins. That's going to be on a special gold cartridge. It's going to be a platformer real similar to the Wonder Boy series, which I love. I love the whole symbolism with our first game. It's new and original. It's going to be a platforming RPG like Wonder Boy. It's going to be great. But it's all about this tiny knight who all the regular size knights were destroyed by the dragon. And there's one guy left that's going to save the princess. And, you know, his one goal or his one request, if he's going to go out and save the princess for the king, is to be knighted. And it's just, I think the symbolism of this little guy taking on all of these dragons and bigger monsters and stuff is just sort of like us taking on, not that I want to compete with Microsoft or Sony or Nintendo, of course, but it feels like that. And so I just love the symbolism of this game. And that's why it kind of spoke to me when John brought it to me. And I just think it's going to be a great game to have. But for the Kickstarter, there may be more than one pack-in game. There may be up to three packing games, and one of these packing games could be a title that people are going to be very familiar with, potentially two of them. So we'll just have to wait and see. That's part of what we want to kind of save that and surprise everybody when the Kickstarter goes live. We will announce some other games up to that, though, as we bring them on board. So there will be announcements on our Facebook page for that, as we go on over the next 4 to 6 weeks, kind of preparing. I want to keep that fresh over there, you know, keep new information coming onto the page. And right now we're gathering lots of information from people, like what types of games they would love to see brought back, what were some of their favorite arcade games they'd like to see brought back, you know, the console games they'd like to see brought back, what mobile games would they rather play with a controller on a cartridge that they want to see ported over, those types of things. And we got a great community over there. It's so much fun to just interact and see what people are saying. We're getting PM'd every day by developers, literally. There's probably two or three a day, like, I want to know more. And so I think that's really positive. And so, you know, I mean, homebrewers these days are making great games. Great games. Every bit as good as games from back in the day, many of them. And this is going to be a great outlet for them. And so I hope they can come on board, make some good money, you know, maybe allow them to do this full time if that's what their dream is, or part time, whatever. And just really make this a machine for the developers, the indie developers, the homebrewers, and a wide variety of consumers. You know, if all goes well, that's my goal.
Awesome.
Make me strategy RPGs and I will buy them.
And call Brian Collin.
Yeah.
Because, and that was his name. James actually showed me an email. Brian Collin, the guy behind...
I know Brian. Rampage.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I know Brian. I bought a... he also did... what was the basketball game that came out?
Arch Rivals.
Arch Rivals, yeah. Brian did Arch Rivals, and I had an Arch Rivals machine, and I looked him up, and he's a great guy.
Yep.
He was a Rampage guy. I mean, yeah, he's great, and so, yeah, I've talked with him. I've got his email address, and I mean, he'd be a great one to just call and just say, hey, man, you want to make some games again?
Absolutely.
I loved his art style of all of those games. That whole cartoony art style, I thought, was just fast. It was just brilliant.
Yep.
And now you guys are
Retronic Radio brothers. So.
Well, yeah. Damn.
You've got one more level.
We're going to be like big heroes and be like, hey, here's his email address, but you already know him. Damn.
Yeah.
I remember me. It was years ago when I talked with him, and I wonder what he's doing now. I think he was still kind of in the business.
Well, they were working on a bunch of...
they were working on... I know they had
games.
Done the Arctic that... That snowmobile arcade game, and they were doing some tabletop bar games, and they were trying to get General Chaos 2 off the ground.
Yeah.
So they're very much still in the industry, still working.
Well, I am going to reach out to Brian and talk with him about General Chaos 2.
Please.
Well, I remember one of their big Kickstarter rewards was like, if I forget what the amount was, but do this, and you get to come and help work on the game.
Yeah. And then they had, like, one huge stretch goal, which was a massive touchscreen arcade machine that I think the people at the Galloping Ghost Arcade were going to develop. But, definitely contact him, because I know that they're still very much active, and they're still producing games, and they're still producing, like, the classic kind of games that podcasts like this one stand up for.
I've still got his contact info here.
We should have it. We could probably give it to you after the show.
Yeah, if you guys still have it, I may have it, but it's been a few years. And I would love to talk with him.
Hey, we'll hook you up. Or I can even send your info to him, either way.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember what, you know, I mean, I called him after I got Arch Rivals. He's not at Double Helix right now.
I don't know.
By the way, we
talked to him about a year ago, so...
Yeah, it was roughly a year. I think it was in the summer when they were doing that General Chaos Kickstarter. It was when we were still doing weekly shows, and I think that was a morning show.
Yeah, this has got to be somebody different. If you've got it, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you guys have it and I don't. But I've got him somewhere. I just got to figure out where the heck it was.
Nice.
I'd love to talk to Eugene Jarvis, you know, and I've interviewed him before and met him at DICE last year, and what a fascinating guy, and you know, they're kicking ass with their arcade, you know, with their games right now. And but I heard he was working with another developer on a new, mobile game or something, which sounded kind of interesting. And you know, it's like all these guys are out here. I'm really trying to learn from them. You know, I brought Michael Katz on board as an industry advisor. I'm talking to Howard Phillips this week. You know, I've gone after Trip Hawkins and Nolan. I mean, I literally want to learn from these guys and just see, you know, and Owen Rubin, he's on board. He did Major Havoc and did the Volcano and Battle Zone and did some other Atari, you know, arcade games and other arcade games. And you know, a lot of these guys think that the time is right, that this is really an interesting concept for this kind of day. But none of us really know how great it's going to go. It's really going to be hard to tell. But all I can say is anybody that's interested in this, I mean, we really need everybody's support. I think if there's enough support with the contacts we've got, we can go and bring some big games out on this thing. big sequels, 16-bit classics, bringing them back. But again, it's going to depend on the demand. You know, if we only sell 5,000 of these, you know, Capcom, Konami, not going to be that interested, right? If we sell 50,000 or 60,000 in 30, 45 days, I think we can get some good, solid interest there. We'll just have to see what happens. It's kind of a big experiment, yeah. You know. But we want to make sure that first and foremost, that this thing is not a toy. I mean, it's going to be, right now we're looking at flash technology and reach it to last 30, 40, 50 years. So that's taking lots of time, you know, looking at, different types of flash technology. A lot of things are guaranteed to 20, but there's not a lot of things, you know, that are proven to last beyond that, you know, sort of speculation. I mean, even when Atari made their system, did they ever think that 30 years from then, I mean, people are still, and I mean, most of those games all work flawlessly. It's amazing.
You don't even have to blow in them. Yeah, they just work.
Yeah, but it's kind of that mass ROM technology, which is really not around today. Surprisingly enough, you know, that was you'd think that the technology today would be better than the technology of yesterday, right? But in some regards, it's not. It's really interesting when you start, trying to. It's hard to make a retro system in today's age with HDTVs. You know, we didn't want an operating system. We don't want a fan in this thing. We don't want connectivity into this thing. We want it to be high def. A lot of people are like, why would they make it high def? We hate high def. Well, I mean, pretty soon that's all, you know, going to be all there is.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want this thing to be obsolete in 5 years.
That was my next question, was output.
Maybe composite, we may have both options, you know, and then it'll kind of depend on scaling and stuff like that. But the TVs are so varied these days and people have them in different modes, you know, and it's difficult. You know, there's lots of things to take into consideration, screen size, resolution. I mean, all of this stuff, and it's a moving target, you know, and that's really why it's been difficult. And you're not going to please everybody, right? I mean, as soon as the hardware is announced on this thing, we're going to have people go, oh, wow, that's the coolest thing ever. We're going to have people, that's the dumbest thing ever. I mean, and everything.
I'm pretty sure those people are.
There's just no way. I mean, no console ever has been able to satisfy everybody, you know, that understand it and tear it apart and understand the hardware and want to see what's inside this thing. But I think at least when they see what's in ours, it's not like we just sold out and threw something, you know, a Raspberry Pi in it or something. I mean, it's, you know, there's been a lot of thought behind it. I mean, probably a year and a half to 2 years worth of thought behind this thing. So I think people will be pretty pleased with it, though, on average.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess my my next question was going to be, you guys are sort of almost a pioneer here when you consider the Martian landscape that you're landing in, which is all of these big disc systems that are full HD, have too much graphics power for their own good. It's just becoming too expensive to create quality content on these new consoles because everyone wants to deliver to the spec. So you guys are kind of like stomping in like the Fairchild Channel F almost. Just like, here's a home cartridge system where you can put in like individual games on cartridges instead of just buying one.
It's almost new again to me. That's more revolutionary. There's something so cool about a cartridge. It's this solid state. There's no moving parts. It's this solid state piece of magic. And then, you know, there's moving things living on this cartridge that's just plastic, and I don't know, to me I just think that's way cooler. When gaming went away from cartridges and you had, you know, disc drives and stuff, I loved the Dreamcast and I loved the Sony PlayStation, don't get me wrong, but I don't know, you just sort of lost something in that. I don't know what it was. I mean, they kind of lost their soul, and I just think cartridges are again, they're timeless. They're all about preserving this stuff. Your kids aren't going to break them and crack them and, you know, all of this crap.
You don't know my kids very well.
Forums mentioned that you know, it's much more kid friendly having a cartridge. There's just something about cartridges. I don't know what it is. And hopefully it's not too late to show people, younger gamers, you know, why it's so special to have these games on a cartridge. And again, we'll just have to see what happens.
Cool. All right. Ben, did you have any questions?
No, I don't have any.
Okay. I guess my final question, probably the most ambitious cartridge console that I can think of off the top of my head, beyond the N64 because they were raising up a cartridge console in an optical media world. Very similar to what you're doing. Except without all the internet connectivity and digital delivery. But I think of the Neo Geo, and I think about the massive capacity of the MVS and AES cartridges.
Yeah.
What kind of capacity are we looking at for the VGS cards?
Oh, boy.
It's a nerd question.
I probably am not going to have a really great answer for it. But when we originally started talking about this, I mean, we were talking about, you know, what would that next – if there would have been another era of cartridge consoles before 3D and polygons and everything took over, what would that have looked like? And originally, we were going down a path of really trying to come up with that next system that would have been after the Neo Geo. Certainly, I mean, this system that we're talking about is going to be able to pull off Neo Geo games with its eyes closed. I mean, but coming out with a system like that and holding developers to a spec that would have been a realistic spec from that time period and seeing what they can do with it. Because, I mean, there are lots of developers that want to know, you know, where is that barrier? What is that max spec, and how do I make a game to fit within that? And that's challenging. And people, I've discovered that developers love that challenge. They always have, right? You had talked about it before. Always, you know, stretching the system to its breaking point, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our system has kind of gone away from that because this thing is going to have lots of flexibility and expandability over the years. But at the same time, we really appreciate the fact of having some, you know, line in the sand for developers to have to hold to. And so, again, I think we will have some of that, but it's going to be a long line. And I think we'll hopefully have some of that information again in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But we, you know, again, we appreciate, you know, that like to have that lid. It challenges them.
Please tell me there's not going to be anything like Skylanders.
not yet. I mean, if a developer makes something for it, I don't know. I love tangibility. You mentioned Skylanders.
Please don't.
Kids love that tangibility.
Yes, it's like crack.
Do it.
$30 for three little plastic figures. And my kids will drop it faster than they will for anything else. It's ridiculous.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to say Nick's a hypocrite. He's got an Amiibo right over there.
Hey, you bought it.
Yeah, to give to you.
Oh, man. I tried to wait as long as possible before getting into the whole Amiibo craze, but I had to get Bowser. Like, Bowser came out like, I got to get Bowser. And so that started it. And now I've got Toon Link up there. Actually, I've only got two.
They do make good decorations.
Really, yeah, I got Link on my shelf just because, you know, I had to have Link.
Believe it or not,
Anybody get Gold Mario yet?
Not yet.
Anybody find one? No? What are those going for now? Does anybody know?
I have no clue.
God, who knows?
Probably a lot. I know that they're kind of screwing with supply in the name of...
recognition.
Making money.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to do things with the cartridge. You know, maybe the first 100 of every cartridge we do is a certain color. Maybe the first 100 are numbered in different color or they're translucent. So, you've got people that want to collect the first 100. You know, all of the blue cartridges or all of the green cartridges. And so, you know, we've got the tooling, we've got the molds. You know, why not have fun with this thing? Have different consoles. You know, I'm really interested in just seeing all of the cool different types of runs that we can do. And like I said, we're doing gold cartridges for the retail pack-in. Now, post-Kickstarter pack-in will not be gold. That'll be exclusive to Kickstarter. I just think making you know, variations of these cartridges is just going to be fun in and of itself, you know.
I was saying to Nick the other day, they should make one that just has the little Lego bits on the top, so you can just build on top of it. All you like.
Yeah. Build your own cart with Lego. Just add to it. That would be cool. Just put the first layer of a Lego on the top of it there. Mm-hmm. That would, you know. But the Jag, though, is rounded. It would be difficult.
Actually, that was going to be my next question. With that that rounded top of the Jaguar cartridges, you guys aren't going to have spine labels either, right?
I don't know. I know a lot of people want them.
Yeah, I saw someone ask about them.
That's just one thing that... It's been a lot of people. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be kind of interesting to figure out a way to slap a label on that thing. Yeah, of course you could do it.
Yeah.
The other thing that people want is a dust cover, you know, for the cartridge slot, because the Jag didn't have one. That's been another thing. And so we may have a plastic insert or something that just pops in there or something.
Actually, my Jaguar does have a dust cover. It's called Cybermorph.
And yeah. Cybermorph. There you go. Right. You just stick it in there. Hey, I mean, come on. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Why not?
That was great. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. I mean, keeping some collectability with the cartridges, I think, is going to be a lot of fun. Cool. Different colors for different games or different cartridge runs, or maybe some will be translucent with LEDs. I mean, who the hell knows what we're going to come up with?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Someone just did a homebrew arcade port for the 2600. I want to say it was maybe 5 to 7 years ago, and that thing had...
StarCastle. Yeah, StarCastle had LEDs.
Right,
yeah.
StarCastle. Yeah. That's absolutely it. They didn't think it was portable to the 2600. This guy figured out how to do it, and it's a translucent cartridge with LEDs in it that light up. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it lights up when you're hit. Yep. Yeah, it's brilliant. And the whole thing flashes like in a dark room. It looks awesome.
Oh, man.
Yeah, gives really certain children epileptic seizures there. Yep, exactly. Yeah, a couple beers.
That's all, folks.
All right. Well, on that note, do you have anything else you want to plug? Any skinny you want to give us?
Have you gotten the molds to any other systems that we should know about?
Have I what?
Gotten the molds to any other systems that we should know about?
Do you have the PCFX injection mold?
Can you make the console in wood grain?
I already talked. Yeah, I think I'd like to see what the wood grain lid would look like. I think it would look awesome with our logo on it. And I may do that. I don't know. Maybe for the Kickstarter, we'll have a level where there's a buy-in for 100 limited edition wood grain ones or something. That would be awesome, I think.
I mean that would be... You've seen the Analogic, right? The consoleized Neo Geo MVS. That that's what I'm thinking of when you're talking about a wood grain retro VGS.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Make the chocolate one. That would be the ultimate Kickstarter goal.
Are these molds food rated?
I doubt it.
I was going to say, I don't think so.
Just put a warning.
I don't know
don't
a machine. I don't think
console.
If you put, you know. They
made in China.
Pellets,
that's
right?
All the warning label you need.
It's all pellets. They feed, you know, pellets into this hopper. And these pellets. And so we just did this translucent run for Jaguar collectors on Atari Age because they've all wanted see-through Atari. So if you guys go to Atari Age and click on the Jaguar thread and look for the translucent thread in there, it's one of the first ones you'll see. There's people now are starting to, I've been shipping them out for the last week, so people are starting to get them. And it's really interesting to start seeing what people are making out of them. So you've already got people with the board in it. You can see through it. It's pretty neat. So if you guys are interested, just want to see what people are doing. They're still early, you know, they're all going to be putting lights in them and everything else. But right now they're just starting to get them. But I think over the next couple of months, we're going to see some really interesting modded Atari Jaguars with these translucent cases. It's going to be pretty cool.
Can't wait, man. That is going to be dope.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, hey, I mean, I got to tell you, man, like just learning like the sordid past of the Jaguar molds. And the potentially extremely bright future they have has been mind-blowing for me. I don't know about anyone
else. They saved us a ton of money, too. A lot of people are – I know we just sort of keep dragging this thing on, you know, put people out of their misery. But it literally – that this is what's made it possible. I mean, if I didn't have the molds for this thing, I mean, this would have been a $1,000 investment up front.
Oh, yeah.
That we don't have to pay. And so people can mock it. They can say all they want. But I tell you what, it's making this possible. And when we're done rebranding it, it's going to look great. You know, and so it is what it is. I mean, it's literally the reason. The Atari Jaguar is the reason that this is happening. And that the people, for whatever reason, for the last 20-whatever years, never destroyed those molds. And I just think that was for a reason. And the reason is the Retro VGS.
Awesome.
There's a sense of destiny to it now.
I was going to say, man, I'm not a man who subscribes to ideas of fate, but this might be fate.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably some of the only tooling. I mean, does Sega still have Genesis tooling laying around? They
Who
may,
knows?
But I doubt it.
Possibly.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. So I think it was kept around for a reason, and I guess we'll see if it takes its place in history once again. We'll have to just wait and see.
I mean,
so the Kickstarter is hopefully going to launch around June, maybe July at the latest.
Awesome,
cool. Well, let us know when it goes. We'll plug it.
Absolutely.
I'll send you guys a system for the room there.
Awesome. Oh my God. Now you're speaking my language.
We can watch you guys fight over it.
We'll play it on live Retro Nick Radio one night just for fun.
Heck yeah.
Broadcast.
Yeah. Send me, no, I'm serious though. Send me an email. Just comp VGS on there.
Okay.
I'll get you guys set up.
Sweet.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
All right.
I'm the only one who didn't say sweet. Yeah. I said cool.
Did I say sweet or I thought I said
no?
Awesome.
We all said sweet except for him.
I said cool.
Sweet.
That's I'm a cool guy. I'm a cool guy as well.
All right, we're in then.
All right, Mike. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and even more of a pleasure hearing about all of this. Let's run down the list and let's plug everything. So the Retro VGS, as you said, is going to hit sometime in June on the Kickstarter for it. And you are the founder of Game Gavel, also the co-founder of Retro Video Game Magazine. Let's throw some URLs out there for the good people at home.
Let's do that. So we'll start with a magazine because it's up and running right now. It's shopreadretro.com. And you guys can check that out. We've got our digital issues for sale there. We do have some print back issues for sale, although they sell out. I think right now there's only a couple of back issues. The Mortal Kombat issue 7, if you love the fighting game genre, that I think we've got about 100 print issues to go over there. Although we've been pre-selling, we're probably sold 20 or 30 of them already. But they'll be on for the next week or two, and it's going to be an awesome issue. And readretro.com is our media site. Although we are having some issues with that WordPress site right now, we're actually in the process of kind of updating and everything. So it may be, you may see some bugs and glitches on it for the time being. Gamegavel.com, like eBay for video games, been around since 2008. We really are hoping we can drive more traffic to our seller. We got a lot of great sellers over there. If you guys are looking for import games, one of our writers is over in Japan. He has like U.S. shipping, which is amazing. I don't know how he does it. From Japan to the U.S. on import stuff.
Wow.
I mean, you know, he's got like, you know, Chrono Trigger for the SNES, the import version is like $5. You know, a lot cheaper than the U.S. version. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
And he's got all that kinds of stuff. He's been selling tons and tons of stuff on there. So if you're looking for import stuff, I can highly recommend him. But there's a lot of great sellers on there. Look at people's feedback, of course. The Retro VGS will be at retrovgs.com. Right now, that is should be forwarding to our Facebook page, although Steve Weta, my partner, has just indicated to me that it's going to a blank page, and I'm not sure why, because I did check with the domain, and it is properly forwarding, so maybe there's some glitch or issue with my domain server right now. I don't know, but you should be able to go to retrovgs.com, and it'll take you to the Facebook page now. If it's, and it should be working probably tomorrow if it's not working for some reason tonight. Or you can just Google Retro VGS and the Facebook page comes right up at the top. We are going to be updating lots of information over there. So for like the latest updates on what's going on with this thing, the Facebook page is where you want to go.
How about Twitter? You got Twitter for the VGS yet?
We have Retro VGS, I think is the Twitter. Twitter.com/RetroVGS. Right. Twitter for the magazine is Read Retro. Facebook for the magazine is Read Retro. The magazine will be in Barnes & Noble here starting with this issue. They'll probably have it on the shelves in about a week and a half to 2 weeks. It's going to be the best looking video game magazine on the shelf. I can pretty much guarantee you that. So you can check it out there if you just want to see one before you buy it. But it's a wonderful magazine. It celebrates all of these games and these genres that we've grown up with. And we've got an all-star writing team. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful magazine. So
wonderful. And you've
That's everything.
Oh, but you've got your own podcast, right, as well?
I am part of Retro Gaming Roundup.
Right.
We've been RetroGamingRoundup.com. We've got lots of great interviews over the course of the last 5 or 6 years that are really in-depth, you know, 1 to 2 hour interviews with a lot of the great gaming icons of the industry. And we always do a top 10 debate on there. I think we're getting ready to record on Monday the top 10 Sega Game Gear games. And we all pick 4 games, and we narrow it down to 10, and we toss 2 out. And we fight about it. It's a you know, pretty popular segment. So, and we've never missed a month in like 6 or 7 years. And it's about a 5 to 7 hour monthly podcast with a different, it's kind of like Saturday Night Live. There's different segments, different skits, you know. And so, yeah, you guys can check that out too.
Nice. Are you guys on Stitcher?
I believe Retro Gaming Roundup is on Stitcher, I believe.
Fabulous. That'll help feed my Stitcher addiction.
yeah.
Totally yeah, selfish reasons.
You know, go back to the very first one from like 2008.
Nice.
And just work your way through and see how far you can get.
No, I mean that's I did that with Hollywood Babylon. Like I'm a pretty hardcore listener.
yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well,
great. Well, thanks for letting me get all the plugs out. I think that's everything.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Thank you so much for being on. I mean, as soon as I heard about this project, I was really interested in it because it's such a bold idea in today's marketplace. And it really is. I mean, when you consider everything is just either digital or optical, and optical's on its way out. So the idea of a ROM-based cartridge is just mind-blowing. So...
Love it.
Definitely wanted to hear some more about it. So we really appreciate you being on.
Yeah, great. I'd love to come back when we know more, you know, down the road a piece or after it launches and talk about games and stuff like that. But it's been great, guys. I really appreciate the support and the help to promote it.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely.
All right.
Cool. Well, everybody, that is Retronic Radio for this week. We are going to go ahead and post a promo code that Mike had mentioned previously. Because there are 10 available if you want to get that Mortal Kombat digital edition of Retro Video Game Magazine. We are also going to post links to different things we were talking about here, the Atari Age forums, the Retro VCS website, and the Makey Makey, because B-Mills wants us to.
It's awesome!
Yep. And I do have a couple of real special shout-outs before we get out of here. One is a huge shout-out to my wife.
Thanks for touching my penis.
She only touched the byproduct of your penis. She's watching your kid.
Still counts.
And that's what I was going to shout out.
That's what
out
I thought
for.
Your thanks was for. But no. Anyways.
Thanks for touching his penis and not mine.
Speaking of my wife, she's actually just come up here and she's like, and she's not touching my penis, by the way.
Oh,
we wouldn't know. We can't see you on video.
No, she's saying she wouldn't be touching my penis if she was down there. She's like, are you on video?
No. I swear, it's hardcore porn. It's not some retro video game show.
No, seriously. Like, it's dudes and midgets and pigs. And, you know, I'm not totally on Retronic Radio.
It's a couple guys sitting around in a circle, and I've already lost this.
Oh. Anyway, no, so huge shout out to my wife, because every time we do the show, she watches my child, but now she's also watching Ben's, because Ben's significant other is out of the country currently. And we also had our first Test of Mike contest. Huge ups to our winner, who managed to not only pick out what the massive board game was, Battlemasters, but he also picked out the Play School Pipeworks in the background, and identified the TurboGrafx-16 just by a case lying on the ground. So kudos to him. You earned those Star Trek The Next Generation tapes, my friend. Enjoy them. Apparently he was excited about the prize, but I got on him for not claiming it sooner, so for all I know he's excited to just piss on them and send me pictures of that. But I don't care, because he won, and he has them, and it's over, and now we can do another contest with our conscience free and clear. So that is...
Am I eligible?
No.
For the
contest? I don't know. He's not an official cast member, kind of.
He keeps showing up, though. I mean...
Well, that's because Nick keeps inviting me, and I have nothing to do on Sundays.
Oh, well, there you go.
Maybe you could find religion and just go to church or something and not bother us.
Nick, do you have a knife?
Somewhere around here. I have a nickel you can maybe, like, sharpen into.
Well, I was thinking if he wants me
to get
into religion...
Who needs a knife when you've got a beer bottle? Females.
There we go.
Yeah.
You got MacGyver this thing.
I've been conditioned to just dislike Ben's
Yeah, I hear the bends is pretty awful. Hurts a lot.
Yeah, that's what happens when you ascend too quickly and you don't exhale.
Bends, no D.
All right. Speaking of things that blow, we're going to take this thing into port and we're going to put it home to bed. That is Retronic Radio for this month. Again, keep your eyes on the tubes for news at a Retro VGS, the first classic cartridge gaming console since the Nintendo 64 hit the market. And we're not talking about all the Asian bootlegs like the, what is it, the Vintendo? Or, the V, I'm sorry.
Nick, make up a name that sort of sounds like Nintendo, and it's probably a Nintendo bootleg in some...
Yeah,
you know.
Well, it uses like little Game Boy Advance carts, and it looks like a Wii. It's really bizarre. But no.
Or the Skintendo.
The Skin... Yes, the Skintendo. Oh, hello. We're going into overtime on Retro Nick Radio. We're going to talk about silicone add-ons for your Retro VGS. No. This is why you don't want a dust cover on that, kids, because when you're pulling out, you don't want anything to try and, like, pinch you in. So... Oh, Lord. Sorry. This is why we don't
sometimes
have guests every day.
Sometimes
being pinched is good. Huh? Say again, I'm sorry.
I said sometimes being pinched is good.
Oh, it's, you know, different strokes.
Every now and then is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, hold on, your wife's there, right? Can we talk to her? No.
And that's where we lost it.
That's where we lost everybody. That's the proverbial step too far.
Thanks.
Females is going to spit coke everywhere.
Thanks, Nick. He was going to give us a console.
Oh, Lord. I've ruined it for everybody, him included.
You need to shut up now.
Okay, that is Retro Nick Radio for this month. We didn't shout out our other podcast. Excuse me. If you like this podcast, and we hope you do, you definitely need to listen to some other similar podcasts. Retro Roundup, as we just learned, which can be found on Stitcher. We about 80% think.
Retro Gaming Roundup.
Retro Gaming Roundup, excuse me. RetroGamingRoundup.com.
Yes, yes.
We also have a few friendly podcasts that we talk to every now and again. We talk to H-Bomb and Friends, and that's Harold. You can follow them at H-Bomb and Friends on Twitter. There's also Frank's podcast, which is the Retro Fungin. We really love Frank. Again, I still have yet to have time to listen to Retro Fungin. I really want to. But yeah, check them out, RetroFungin.com, RetroFungin on Twitter. Also, Retro Game Squad, which has been a really big friend of the podcast. I appear on there every so often. Next time I'm going to be on there, we're going to be talking about the PC Engine / TurboGrafx-16, because I was a major fanboy for that when it was new, and I still am. And I think that's all I've got for plugs. Definitely listen to James and Lewis's podcast, Boldly Going Somewhere, on GammonGeek.com. And check out the Retronic Radio comic, rnrcomics.com, which is done in-house by Steve, who cannot draw but can take pictures with a very expensive camera and does so weekly. Sorry, twice weekly.
I say we make him start using a Polaroid disposable. Kodak disposable.
Woohoo! Lord, we totally should, just so it matches the logo I made him.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Cool.
I will buy him the cameras.
Why not?
Yeah.
Do they still make those? You might have to buy them used.
No, I'm pretty sure
you get them at like CVS.
you can get the disposables, but not the Polaroid.
I want to buy used disposable cameras. Clown porn, wedding, birthday, clown porn.
A lot of clowns getting it on.
If my wife used to work at the Walmart Photo Lab, you'd be surprised. that is Retro Nick Radio for this month. I'm Nick.
I'm Ben.
I'm James.
I'm Ben.
All right.
Hit the button, Nick.
You've been listening to Retronic Radio, proudly hosted by Retronic.com, WizardsWorld.com, and GammonGeek.com.
And again, big thank you, Mike.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Definitely, it's been great. Take it easy, guys. Finish off that 12er.